Hey, welcome everyone to the Reflex Blues Show. I'm your host Donovan Beery, recording live from the Funny Bone, Omaha. This is like the first time I've actually been in, we've recorded in like comedy venue, right?
This is a wonderful venue. My goodness.
Yeah, no, feel free. No, you can come in.
Just
hang out. Oh, we're just hanging out. Life in the green room is
life in the green room. There's going to be people popping in. What I love, which Donovan and I both just noticed, was we're at a comedy club, which I've never spoken in a comedy club.
Oh, you're going to get heckled, man.
I'm so excited.
I came here just to heckle the speakers.
Awesome. Well, I got lots of defense for that. But what's amazing is the green room says janitorial services on the outside, which I think, as we both stated, I think is strategic. This is also one of the smallest green rooms I've ever seen. So this might actually have been a janitorial closet.
It likely was.
It likely was. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah, I love, to me, stand-up comedy and design have a lot of parallels. And so I think it's fun to be in a comedy venue, which is first off, that's a great idea for the Funny Bone, to be like, well, no one is fucking coming to our club at 8 a.m. till, you know, whatever. Why not rent it out to people having conferences? Like, it's a great, you know, it's all set up. They got the AV, they got the audio, they got the sound.
Well, we're here for the, this is the yearly Meet the Pros, which AAF Nebraska has done. This is like, they've done this like 60 years in a row.
Have they really?
Yeah, this event.
That's awesome.
And of course, when I think every year I mention, like, when I went to school, I just figured it was a pretty new event. And that was a while ago. And it turns out it had already been around for decades
That's
before
awesome.
Then.
That's awesome.
So thanks to AAF Nebraska, and they brought in Tad Carpenter. By the way, Tad, welcome to the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to meet you.
Yeah, and this is the first year it's been here. I think the last year, you know, it's been at the Scott Center. We've recorded from a couple locations since they've, over the years here. But this is the first event they've had here, and I assumed it was more because Funny Bone, they buy a lot of radio ads, and I assume someone from Ad Club knew somebody, but I don't know. I'm just speculating.
That would make a lot of sense. I was talking to the bartender, which I love. The bartender is here at the Funny Bone at 8 a.m. You know what I mean?
They're probably like who needs a bartender at 8 in the morning?
I'm 10 minutes away from saying, what the hell, let's get it started. But I was talking to her, and she was like, yeah, just like 2 years ago, someone randomly called and asked if they could use our room for a corporate event. And we were like, wait, do you have the right number? What? But then it hit them, and they were like, oh my gosh, we could be utilizing this space all day long. And now they've been renting it out. And like, God, that's a great idea. It's like, all of us have other ways to build revenue that we're not tapping into, and the damn Funny Bone figured it out. It was like, yeah, we have like 12 hours a day that literally no one's coming to see comedy. Yeah, let's get some other schlubs in here to like see whatever the hell they want, you know?
Yeah, this may have been a janitorial closet, but my guess is it probably was built for this, because I think they built this building, this whole area, Funny Bone moved in when it opened.
From day one.
Day one.
Yeah.
I think they built this venue for them.
So back to what we were saying, I think it's a strategic, wonderful, genius idea to put janitorial services in front of the green room so that when, you know, when real comedy shows are happening and you're coming to see Bill Burr or something, people aren't like, oh shit, there's a green room, I'm going to pop in there and talk to him. Not that Bill doesn't do the Funny Bone anymore, but you know, 30 years ago when Bill Burr was doing the Funny Bone.
Everyone's come through.
Everyone's at some point, right? Yeah,
And if they didn't come through here, they came through their old location.
Yep.
So you'll see, Seinfeld came through their old location.
Oh yeah, totally.
Like everybody
right.
did.
Yeah, yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yep.
So.
And there's Funny Bones all over the country. It's a franchise, right?
I think they're independently run though.
Okay, gotcha. It's a name, you franchise that out, and they're independently run.
I think, but
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know,
that's not what we're here to talk about, but I'm interested in those types of things.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm interested in how you've had to tailor your, first off, what are you talking about here, and how did you tailor it to deal with, you're dealing with a fake brick wall behind you, and you're going to be in a comedy setting, so you're going to get heckled.
Oh my gosh. So today's talk is going to be...
And there's about 100 students here ready to heckle.
Ready to heckle. Oh man, if there's no tougher audience than angsty 19-year-olds, you know what I mean? So that's going to be exciting. You know, today it's going to be a lot of, what's the deal with AI? You know, I'm going to do a lot of like observational humor. It's going to be a lot of that. No, it's today we're talking about... I like that I've been fortunate enough to go around and talk all over the place. And I love it when I get to speak kind of in my backyard in the Midwest. I'm a kid from Kansas. I'm born and raised in Kansas City, live in Kansas City. And getting to just come up here a couple hours to Omaha.
And the last person I saw speak here was Chris Porter, who's from Kansas City.
Oh, no kidding.
A comedian.
I don't know. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. No kidding. Where's he?
He comes through here like at least once a year.
Yeah. He is a Kansas City guy, isn't he?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think he even had a special called like Man from Kansas, so you need to...
I need to look that up. No,
yeah,
I didn't.
Like, you know,
he's done
post
great.
Post off of that.
Yeah, he's done great. Yeah, so I mean, what I like to... It's great to be able to speak, especially... I love being able to talk to students. I taught at the University of Kansas for 10 years, and I miss teaching, and I love to be able to kind of interact and... There's such a wonderful energy from young designers that are like just falling in love with graphic design. And that's a lot of fun to be around. And so, today it's great to be able to talk about, hey, here's my kind of story coming from Kansas in the Midwest, just as a lot of these kids are all coming from Nebraska and Iowa. And I was told there's even a couple kids that came up from Kansas. It's great to talk to them and kind of share the experience, because I remember being in college. And I remember how much I enjoyed events like this and how much I enjoyed hearing from professionals and designers and hearing their story, but then also seeing how they work. How do they get from job comes in to completed project? To me, that's very educational when, you know, yeah, when you're in school, you're in school to explore and play and stretch and start to just learn what this kind of is a little bit. But to actually see how people at your next stop in the real world, quote unquote, make things and get it done, I think that's like really valuable. That's kind of stuff you can't teach, you know? It's hard to teach that a lot of times, you know? It's nice to be able to see.
Yeah, because you also don't even realize what is a regular project. And no one really talks about that in school. I mean, they'll say like this is a, like I'm teaching right now, and I'll say like this is a very real world project, but I don't think they fully understand like,
What does that mean?
This is just a project that hits your desk Tuesday and it's due on Thursday.
Right. Totally. Absolutely. And I think that's always the thing that's hard, I think, for students to start to understand, because I think that'll always be a question that gets asked. So that project you just walked us through, like, how long did you get to work on that? You know what I mean? And like, that's always like a hard thing to answer, because it's like, I have 20 years of tricks that allow me to work a little faster. And you one day will have that too, you know? So when you hear that, oh yeah, I did a lot of these logo concepts I did in like, you know, a couple days, you know what I mean? Or you know, whatever. They're like, oh my God, no way, what? That's insane, you know? And it's like, I have 20 years of preparation for that 3 or 4 days, you know? It's not just 3 or 4 days, it's 3 or 4 days plus 20 years, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that's hard sometimes with students to understand. And that's not, you know, I mean, I'm gonna walk us through a project today that we haven't shared publicly. And we're very excited about, and it's just a different process, and so I'm excited to share it. And it was a project that took years, and so yes, from a brand identity standpoint, yeah, we were cranking brand identities out in weeks, like boom 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 boom, but then the client landing on the identity was like a fraction of the project. We then had to implement it and build it out and design hundreds of applications, and then actually figure out how to get them made and get them installed properly. And then like, there's almost a level of like construction administration that was layered onto this project. So it shows like a full encompassing design experience, you know? And I think that's nice for students to see when you're just living in this world of like trying to figure out, geez Louise, what are design principles and how do I apply those to me, a person that just likes to draw and make things, you know? And like, I think hopefully that will be something that's enjoyable, and you know, they walk away with one or two little nuggets, you know.
Well, I mean, hopefully, I mean, you are there speaking at the lunchtime, right? That's where they put the keynote still.
Is it while they're meeting? Yeah.
So they might also be your talk is going to be heavily influenced based on how happy they are with meal in front of them.
And it, you know, they're going to be serving. I was, you know, there's 100 students, and then I'm told there's, you know, somewhere between 40 and 50 professionals coming in too. So you're feeding 150 people. My guess is the meal is not great. Hopefully it's like just some like good old sandwiches and
hopefully
chips.
It's not something throwable.
Exactly.
That's like, what you're really
can you pull
about.
Tomatoes off of this dish and chuck them at me? It's happened before. Let's see. Maybe.
This is the venue for it.
This is the venue for it.
All right. Well, we're going to be right back with Tad. Tad, you're from Carpenter Collective in Kansas City. And is the best way to follow you or anything just go to carpentercollective.com?
All of the, yes, yeah. Well, our website is carpentercollective.com, and we are a design and branding studio, specifically brand identity. I would say the backbone of almost everything we do is brand centric, you know, from brand strategy to brand development, brand naming. Majority of the work we do is in, I would say hospitality, specifically food and beverage. We do lots of food packaging, food brands.
Yeah, you even came in and did the Sonic Summer Cups.
I worked with Sonic and did a ton of Sonic campaign one summer and did all the cups. It's always very humbling to go around the country and see your work smashed on the ground and in trash cans all over the country.
Oh, sorry, I'm just going to put my purse in here if I can.
That's fun. You can.
Oh, I didn't know you were recording. I'm sorry.
That's fine. No, we'll just leave this all in, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll leave this in. Say hello to the world. No.
Life in the green room.
Life in the green room. Didn't they see this is janitorial services? They don't need to be in janitorial services. The sign is not working for us.
It is not.
Or someone is directing people, hey, janitorial services actually are greater. Go ahead and put all your shit in there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, carpentercollective.com is our website, and then you can follow.
And you've thrown some, if you're listening, you've probably thrown his work on the ground and stepped on it.
You have clearly thrown something I have made away in the trash. And that's what I think that's something you learn very quickly, is it's a humbling feeling knowing that so much of your hard work is filling landfills all over the world, you know. It sometimes kind of makes me feel kind of not great about what we do, but hopefully as a designer.
I'm sure when the job comes in, you're like, this sounds awesome. And then afterwards you're like, oh, this is just going to go. Yeah.
Wait a second. How many hundreds of thousands of these are you printing? It's not like people are reusing this. This is my beef with Sonic, but I understand it. I completely understand it from a business standpoint, but my beef as a human being in the year of, you know, the 2020s is that why on earth is any franchise still using styrofoam? We know what that is made of and what it does to the world, right?
Sure.
Now, I understand Sonic is the drink stop of America. You know, I'm a company man. I'm going to throw that out there. I mean, that's where you go to get a beverage.
And I do know that styrofoam with the Sonic ice makes your beverage tastier.
It honestly does. However, is there not someone that has found an appropriate replacement for styrofoam for cold beverages?
I also agree with that standpoint of it.
Like, hey brands, get rid of styrofoam. Do you remember the big deal, like, this got to be 20-some years ago, when McDonald's removed styrofoam entirely and went to paper products?
In America,
exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was huge.
Well, I think they did that and make, what was it, the hot and the cold side, and they had Jason Alexander do the TV commercial promoting it.
Oh, and that was such a good, if anybody hasn't seen the Jason Alexander,
or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I think that was the point where everyone's like, okay, we were going to look the other way on the styrofoam holding my Big Mac, but you have now tripled the amount of styrofoam on my Big Mac.
Absolutely. Well, that's, as designers, we hopefully, and I like feel like it's like a kind of buzzwordy and it's kind of annoying, but like, you know, ultimately you are a problem solver for these clients that you're working with.
Right.
And like, hopefully we can be advocates for things that are important, like our environment. And so when you are working on packaging work, if you can make sure that you're utilizing appropriate materials and try not to be wasteful, like you're describing the, you know, McDonald's packaging from like, you know, 88.
Yeah, which was, whatever which year was, it was, I think it was shortly after that where people were like, yeah, we went too far. We just got to go paper now.
Exactly. You're, like, basically just giving us, like, a styrofoam, you know, cooler for all the food that we're ordering, you know?
That's right.
You know?
You order for a family of four, and you're like, this
doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
So hopefully, as a designer, you can be an advocate for actually, like, you know, improving things, you know, is what you would hope, so.
And it's not on every project. And obviously, you weren't the agency of record for Sonic.
No.
It said you worked through their agency to do the work. So,
yep.
So obviously, you weren't going into the Sonic boardrooms and yelling at them. But
damn it, we need to do... No.
But the cups looked good, by the way.
Thank you very much. It was very... I mean, it's one of my favorite probably. It was just like a wonderful... And I'm, you know, I'm using Sonic examples. They're wonderful to work with. Great group of folks over there. Good Midwestern company, you know. Shout out to Oklahoma City, I believe. They're great. And I understand, like I said, I understand the rationale behind it. They're using the same product for water, soda, teas, and ice cream. You know what I mean? They need something that can contain all of those. Is the thought process. I get it. But man, we can do something. Let's be think. We're all smart. We're you know, if humans can do anything, it is solve weird food related problems. I don't know, most problems we can't solve, but when it comes to food and how we you know, package food, I think we can figure this out. But yeah, it's funny. You're right. Most jobs, you're not reinventing the wheel or the form a lot of times. A lot of times there are a lot of elements that are out of your control, and you have to kind of live within those elements, you know. But then other times we work with a lot of mom-pa, for lack of a better term, startups in the food world that are looking to us for recommendations. Who do I print this with? What do I print this on? What's the material? What's the dye line? What's all of these things? And that's when we can make some recommendations. They're obviously not printing the amount of SKUs that McDonald's and Sonic are, but, you know, there's a couple clients of ours that started off literally, you know, husband and wife teams that I think one day, no one's going to get to that Sonic level, I think one day are going to scale really big and be very national-based clients. And you hope that some of this practice you instilled from the start kind of stick around even when they start to scale.
And you also find out that the big companies just follow the smaller companies anyway.
100%.
So
yep, you're absolutely right.
And then small companies follow the big. I don't know who's actually doing the leading here, but
yeah,
you have to lead where you can, I guess.
Yeah, dog chasing the tail a little bit, you know, for sure. But yeah, it is, and you know, I'm a Midwestern guy, so I like food. So I love working in food and beverage and you know, some of those wonderful vices, you know? Yeah.
And then I noticed that based on your merch table here and your website, you're somehow infatuated with the sun. Is it because it grows the food? Or what was it that got you into being like, I'm going to be infatuated with this? Or are you just
totally
a morning person and you're like, I don't understand why people
annoyingly
like the dark?
Annoyingly, I am. I kind of, I remember my wife and I first started dating. She set a rule. She's like, you can't talk, sing, make noises, you know, for the first hour you're awake, you know. I am. But it's I talk about it in my talk. In 2015 I started a project called Sunday Suns. Like a lot of folks, I am someone that at times has some depressive tendencies and think all
not
of
us, in the design
not
world.
Not in the design world.
No.
Not as an artist, not as
no,
a moody
creatives.
Emotional meat
That's
bag
not where
over
creativity
here.
Actually
yeah, exactly.
All comes from.
And so I remember in 2015 just being like, what the hell am I doing? Why am I doing this? I was burned.
In 2015 it was like, you wait 5 years.
Exactly. If I only knew what was coming around the bend. Yeah. And so I remember just being really just burnt out and like I didn't know what I was doing and I lost the joy of doing what we all get to do. And I just had this silly idea of, can I find even an hour a week to make something for myself? Not for a client, not for a deadline, not for some brief that's coming across my desk. Just like the joy of making things, the joy of the process that we all get to partake in, can that kind of maybe get me out of some of these feelings I'm having? And so I think it's important to create rules and habits and structure for yourself as a creative person. And so I just said, hey, what if every Sunday for an hour or 2 hours, I make a sun every Sunday for myself? And so I just started doing this. And somehow, some way, I've now been doing this for 458 straight weeks. That's almost 9 years now.
Oh, my.
And I haven't missed a Sunday. And that's borderline psychopath behavior, but it's also one of those things that's become such a part of my weekly routine and it's therapeutic. It's very therapeutic. You talk about, you know, what's been going on the last 3 or 4 years, just as a place for a Midwestern guy that's maybe not always the best at expressing my emotions and my feelings, but can I do that through art? I think art is very therapeutic. It allows me to kind of, it's meditative. I get to do it by myself, alone, before my wife and kid wake up, you know, early in the morning on a Sunday. It allows me to explore mediums. Hey, I'm going to make a little logo. Hey, I love to paint. I'm going to do like tiny little painting. Hey, I'm going to make a little sculpture. I can play with all these different mediums that maybe I don't get to for clients every day. And it's been really rewarding, you know?
It's weird because we've actually talked about this on the show before, and I think we even did a talk about it years ago where it's like, how do you stay motivated? And sometimes like, well, when you're not doing work, you do other work. And it,
absolutely.
But the key is you're doing something that you enjoy. But I think part of it is you remember why you like the profession.
That's exactly it. It's like the
because you can do logos all day long, if they're for other clients, you kind of. And I think that's what students don't understand too, is like, I'm doing this logo or this cup for Sonic, but I'm kind of burned out. And you're like,
totally.
How are you burned out on this project? It looks amazing. And you're like, but it's not for you.
Yep, exactly. And which is great. And it's like, I love that part of our profession is that a lot of these clients that come to us, they've had a dream maybe their whole life, and you're actually getting to bring that dream to fruition for them visually, strategically, and like you're literally getting to build this dream for them. That's really rewarding and really wonderful. But yeah, absolutely. There are times where you're like, there's things I want to do too, you know, and I want to make things. And so it is. And it's like, I'm a firm believer that happiness comes from how we spend our time. Happiness doesn't come from the various, you know, awards and little victories we get along the way. There's always, you know, there's always going to be another kind of, you know, summit to climb. But
those are nice, though.
Oh my God, they're wonderful.
Yeah.
They're wonderful. Don't get me wrong. But ultimately, they're fading very quickly. And I feel like happiness truly comes from how we spend our time. And to me, I know I find joy in making things. I have ever since I was a child. That's what I try to kind of anchor myself to, is exploring and making and playing. I think play is such a huge part of our job that I think a lot of us sometimes with deadlines and full schedules and 100 Zoom meetings lose sight on is, oh my God, it is important that, like, you got to remind yourself to play a little bit. Like, that's, your work is the best when you're playing. Pretty basic, you know. When you find joy in things, which is generally play, you're going to do a little better. Your attitude's going to be a little better. You know, when you're reluctantly working on something or stressed or whatever, yeah, it's going to show, you know. So you try to infuse your day-to-day with some of those things.
And you also want to, I always tell people, you got to show the work you want to do. You don't have to show everything you do, because sometimes you're like, I don't want to do more of this work, so you don't show it.
Mm-hmm.
But so sometimes doing personal projects, I've found, will lead because the client doesn't know what you want to do, but you start showing personal projects in with your other work. I assume that the sons have made it into client's work, 100%. or that style has somehow gotten 100%. You a job in a direction you wanted.
Yep, absolutely. And
might have lost you a PowerPoint.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. There's been many times where a new client has approached us. They create, you know, for lack of a better term, some sort of little mood board or like some little thing. And there'll be all types of work in there, but there'll be a son in there. And that client doesn't know it's like a son from my Sunday Sun project normally at all. They've just found that and put it in, you know, whatever deck it is they're sharing with us or for inspiration or, you know, kind of the directive they want to go. And I'm like, awesome, cool. Like, that's out there in the world now. That's out there working as a calling card for you. The more work you can put out in the world, I think normally better. To your point, we all have work we do and we're like, well, that ain't ever going to show the light of day. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you're like, I'm glad that one's over and good night, you know?
And I should say, it doesn't mean you think it's bad work. It's just not the work you want to do.
Exactly. I one of the, probably the biggest project I will probably ever work on was a book jacket I designed many, 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 many years ago. I've designed a lot of book jackets over the years. I did this book jacket. It was okay. It was fine. It worked very well for what I was being asked to do, But at the end of the day, like you said, it was fine, it was good, it was whatever. But it wasn't, it was, we were working in a visual style that was different than I normally work in. It wasn't entirely the vibe I wanted to go on. And I was just like, great, it's over. I never have to look at this thing again. It'll be fine. You know, you fast forward a year later, the book comes out. Oh, it's getting some pretty good reviews. That's great. That's great. You know, 6 months go by. Oh shit, it's a number one New York Times bestseller. Well, now it's doing really well. You know, fast forward. Oh shit, now it's being transferred into 50 different other languages. A couple years go by. Oh no, they're now making a major motion picture of this movie. And this whole thing is becoming a movie. And it's now being taught as a curriculum in school and being a required reading book for people. Oh, it's a movement now. Now there's apparel. Now there's all that. And I'm like, well, this is never going away. I got to learn to love it. And it just happens.
And with book covers, your name's kind of in there. They put credits in them.
They do. You are attached to that, whether you like it or not. It's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. It's neat that, like, still to this day, schools from all over the world will tag me or send me photographs of, you know, kids holding up this book jacket or them drawing my cover. It's a very iconic. It's the book I'm talking about. I don't know if anyone out there has read the book Wonder. It's a wonderful book. It's a book called Wonder. It came out about 12 years ago, roughly. And it is a wonderful book. And I remember doing the jacket and just being like, I'm hitting on everything they want. I don't know how I personally am feeling about it, but I do feel like it feels different than anything out there in this market. So I feel very happy with that. But we just went down a very different stylistic road than I probably normally would have. And there's a lot of various reasons why, which are fine and great.
Right. I mean, the author is the creator of the work in the end. So,
absolutely.
So it's their vision, not necessarily all yours.
Absolutely. And I love this author very, very much. And she handpicked me to do this jacket, which I was incredibly honored for. And she saw something I did, you know, some inside baseball. She had seen some sketchbook pages of mine from 15 years ago. And there was something so spontaneous and unique in some of these like sketchbook drawings I had done that she had seen, that she was like, that's like kind of the vibe I want. I'm like, I don't really work in that style, but okay, let's try some things. And I mean, I'm very happy with the cover. And like, if anybody's ever walked into Barnes & Noble or like something, like this particular cover screams off the shelf because of, it's an icon. And as a logo designer, like I applied some ideas there.
Sure.
That it's almost an icon on the cover. It's gone on to create this whole wonderful kind of wonder movement. It's cool to be a part of it. And just, I think it was a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, time means nothing anymore. Wonder celebrated its 10th anniversary, and Penguin Random House approached me to do a new cover, an updated cover. And then we also did an illustrated version of the novel. So we did 20 different illustrations that work throughout the reissue of the book for the 10th anniversary, which was cool to do too.
Yeah, that is cool too, because I think books and movies constantly will do like, oh, we'll do new covers, but albums they don't. People attach to an album, and that cover is going to stick forever.
Well, that's the thing. I remember when they turned this into a motion picture. You know, there was a hot minute where my jacket was replaced with Julia Roberts' face. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, cool. Thanks a lot, Owen Wilson and Julia Roberts.
Oh, and on
you
know the book, I mean? Too, probably.
That's what I mean. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. They reissue the book for a moment when the movie's coming out, because us humans, you know, associate, you know, celebrities with properties. And so I was like, oh, thanks a lot. There goes all my work. But luckily, this audience, like, was pretty loyal to the original jacket, and you know, it's back to the original one now. So but I don't know how we went off a tangent on that, but it was a really fun experience.
Well, it just reminds me that a lot of these projects you do and then they take on lives of their own, and
that's exactly
you
right.
Can't do anything about it.
It is a bird you kick out of the nest and you hope it flies, rather than you know, shitting on a car from 100 feet in the air. You know what I mean? It's one or the other. And I've had them both happen. So, yeah.
And you don't, you know, you have ideas like, hey, this company's going to take off, this one isn't. But
and you never know.
No.
And then the ones, and often say, I've had ones where I'm like, well, this is a billion dollar idea. This is incredible. And then, you know, you're like, oh, wow, I had no idea how bad the leadership actually was. That tank, like, that went nowhere. Or then you have one, you're like, well, this is a funny little idea. And then it's just to the moon. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we had one when it's like, I don't know. They're in a weird market. There's no way this will last more than 6 months.
Yep.
But you're like, but I trust the people in it, and then it's still around. And then you had one where you're like, this guy's going to take this company crazy. And then the industry at the time, it was like, oh, you tried to launch in 2008, 2009.
Yep, exactly.
And it's over.
Yep. Absolutely. It was hard. Yeah. I mean, that's when we launched our company, was 08, 09. And I remember being like, so excited, and then being like, did I just pick the wrong year to start a company? But somehow we made it.
Well, Somehow there were no other alternative for you. There's no jobs at that time, so...
That's true. I quit a job, so I was like, Yeah, let's do this. Well, wait, what's going on? Yeah.
Tad, you were probably going to get fired. It was 2008, 2009.
Honestly, so. I was. I totally probably was. Yeah. Probably was, yeah. I remember. My wife and I were engaged, and we were getting ready to get married. This probably embarrassed my father-in-law, but he's a lovely man. But I remember my wife and I were engaged at the time, and I was getting ready to start our company, and I was going out on my own first by myself, and I remember my father-in-law pulling my wife, my at the time, my fiance, my now wife, to the side and being like, are you okay marrying somebody who's unemployed? And my wife being like, Dad, I promise, Dad's going to be all right. I think he's going to be all right, you know. And he was like, okay, all right. We had a plan. We got it figured out, but yeah.
Well, I'm glad it's worked out for you.
Well, knock on wood. We'll see. It can all change, you know.
All right. Well, we're going to be right back with Tad Carpenter. Okay, Tad, one last question before we go. What's the advice you're giving these kids when they come up to your table?
Oh, hell.
Other than to buy more of your merch, which all looks great.
Buy merch. Have you thought about law school?
Okay. Well, I think law school might get replaced by AI before the other.
Actually, so. You're right. Actually, you're
all the entry jobs, the clerks, they're like, we're just...
Oh, no. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Yeah, man, gosh. Yeah, we're all going to just be working for the robots, right? With students, the thing there's always going to be that one blanket question. Like, what advice do you have for me getting ready to graduate? And it's like, I don't know, man. Like, you know, you should probably know how to draw a little bit, you know. But ultimately, like, to me, what I used to tell my students is, don't be too cool to identify who your heroes are. Hopefully you're passionate about this, and there's some folks that you really admire and work that you look at continuously, and like, identify who your heroes are. And while you're young, and like, honestly, money really doesn't matter all that much, go fight tooth and nail to work for one of those heroes, because you will learn more mopping the floor at whatever studio it is that you admire than you will, you know, getting sucked up at a 800 person ad agency or something like that. Go work for one of your heroes, because it is truly will learn so much so fast, and you can do that when you're young, you know.
Well, that's obviously leads to the question, who is your hero, and did you get to work for one of them?
I mean, there's a few. I have a very strange and unique experience that my biggest hero was my dad, and my dad's an illustrator and a designer and a creative director, and I grew up with a creative director as a dad. My whole life was art directed. No. Whether I knew it or not, I was learning from him every day and working with him, and I still pick his brain literally all the time. And
So your advice is just to work for Tad's dad?
Correct.
You're just here to show
my dad's number
interns
is,
for your dad. Exactly. I like this.
Yeah, no. He is now retired. He's amazing. And I wish I would have listened to this advice even more. Like, I ended up getting to work at a studio right out of school that was a really good studio. And it was a boutique design firm, and that's the kind of experience I like, and I wanted to try, and that's what I like. I like boutique studios because the good and the bad of it is you get to concept the work, You get to come up with the identities, the ideas of the work. You get to pitch the work. You have to implement the work. You have to take out the trash. You have to change the light bulb. I like that you have to do all of the things, where when you get at some bigger places, and I understand why, it's siloed. Things are siloed more. And so I appreciate getting to work at where I got to work. And one of the founders is somebody I do really, really look up to. I didn't know that at the time, which is great. I do wish part of me as a young, you know, 22, 23, even just any time before 25, I wish I would have, because I got this job in my backyard, it kept me in Kansas City. I wish I would have just picked up and gone to New York for 4 or 5 years or forever at that time. My wife and I both thought we would end up there, but we both got great jobs. Talk about working for 1 year. My wife's first job was at Willoughby Design Group.
Oh, Ann's been on the show years ago.
Oh, she's great.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so my wife got to work with Ann Willoughby, was hired by Ann Willoughby, and anyone out there that should go back and listen to that episode, but Ann ran the longest women-ran design firm in the country in Kansas City. And
just a few years ago, sold it to a couple of the ladies that worked
there. The employees, yep. Yeah. Just a couple of years, she finally retired and sold it to two of the employees. So it's still, both women ran, so still probably the oldest, well, it is the oldest woman ran design studio in the country. And so my wife got a great gig to go work for Ann and learn and pick her brain in that world, which is a great place. And so she was there and, you know, until she, you know, me and her joined forces. So.
Okay. Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, Ted,
you don't need to come to my talk now, by the way. You just heard pretty much everything.
Well, you know that I'm just going to heckle.
Okay,
that's
true.
That's the only reason
that's
I
true.
Came
you're
for,
just that,
so...
Yeah. So it doesn't matter. You can take a nap, wake
that's
up,
that's why
heckle.
You're trying to tell me. You're like, you don't need to heckle me the whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, I appreciate the time. And the kids are going to love it.
Oh, man. We'll have some fun up there. I get to, speak to them while they're eating lunch. There's nothing better than hearing forks and knives and chewing.
I think the weirder part about the talking with the eating is that they have to space the tables so your crowd is much more dispersed than if it's in, you know.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, most times when you give a talk, the people are kind of, they're brought in.
Oh, absolutely.
But when you speak during a lunch.
Everyone's spread out because that is weird.
So then they kind of, it's this whole, like, there's more of a disconnect from you to them.
To me, it's hard because I'm watching them eat and I'm going to want to eat. So I'm like, can they bring a plate up for me to eat while I'm talking? Is that frowned upon? Or?
We're here. Someone in the Village Point here. Someone here sells food on a stick, like corn dogs. I'm sure.
Oh my god, that'd be great.
Then you could just eat while you're up there. I don't see that problem.
Oh,
I mean, if you're sitting there having a steak, it's gonna be hard up on stage. But I think.
Oh,
corn dogs. Maybe,
I love food on
maybe,
sticks.
Maybe a bag of Doritos. You could just eat that. And,
oh
you know.
Yeah, I'm a pro. Oh, I don't even need my fingers. I could just. Drink them, you know, you just open it and throw it down the hatch.
Yeah, and then get the mic and they can just hear you chew. That'll
is there a Sonic nearby?
I'm sure there is. there's one on like 180th and Center, so like 20 blocks.
Let's go get some Styrofoam goodies. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We'll crush your work later. Actually, they're not running the summer cups right now.
So. No, they're not, unfortunately. They need to have me back. But,
okay,
yeah,
well,
yeah.
Thanks again to AAF Nebraska for hosting this Great Meet the Pros event. And thanks for the Funny Bone Omaha for hosting the heckling that we're going to be doing later. But,
it's going to be great.
We'll be back soon. Thanks.
Thanks, Donovan.
The Reflex Blues Show with Donovan Beery is hosted at 36point.com. Music by Dust Lab.